This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by Cash.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by PillPack, a full-service online pharmacy that combines modern technology, convenient packaging, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/TWiT to save $20 on your vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Right now, get free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/knowhow. Today on Knowhow, welcome to San Francisco, California for GDC, the Game Developer Conference 2016. We're here at the Sony booth for PlayStation VR, and I'm standing next to OMG Chad. I don't know if you remember this guy. Kind of a gamer, kind of a big deal. Chad, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Now, just a few minutes ago, we got a chance to get some very exclusive access, sort of a hands-on, behind-the-velvet-rope look at PlayStation VR. Now, I know that you've tried the Oculus Rift, you've tried
everything.
The HTC Vive, you tried the Samsung Gear.
I've tried the Star VR. I've tried VR systems no one's ever heard about.
Every kind of VR. And I know you're very excited about VR.
Yes.
Where does this rank?
Really high up there. I mean, I would put this, to me, still, the HTC Vive is the pinnacle.
Right.
But of course it's going to be, because you have to have Lightroom. You have to have a whole room dedicated to it. You know, like, of course it's going to be the most epic, you know, system, because it's the most expensive. This, I believe, to me, after that demo, ranks above Oculus.
I think so. And I think one of the big things there is people already have a PlayStation 4.
They already have
it. And this is designed for a
PlayStation
4. You don't
have to get a new PC that's
$1,500 to $2,000 PC.
Exactly. Exactly. And the hardware that PlayStation is offering, I mean, we're talking about Sony. Sony makes hardware all the time. This isn't someone who's trying to reinvent the wheel with coming out with really, really slick and great working hardware. And on top of that, you can either use the controller that you already have in your home with the PlayStation
Move.
4 or the Move.
Which was great. Actually,
the
that
Move
was fantastic.
Is fantastic. It's one of the best movement-based controllers out there, and they've been around forever. You could go and pick up a Move right now for $60, or you could go get one used for about $8 a controller.
What I loved about the Move, I was playing a shooter game. It was I can't remember what it was. It was something about with
zombies and urine and
mining.
Yeah, exactly.
But I had one Move controller in each hand, and it was sensitive enough where it could detect when I, like, turned the gun in my hand. So it wasn't just my whole arm.
Right.
Now, let me ask you about that technology. What makes for a good VR set? Because I get nauseous pretty easily. And I'd say all of the ones I've tried, except the Vive and the Oculus Rift, I maxed out at about 5-10 minutes.
Right.
This, we were playing for 15 minutes. I took it off. I was fine. What makes that work?
You can never have a disconnect between your head's movement and what the VR device is displaying. And with things like Gear VR, it's really difficult to figure out that your head is moving forward or backward or side to side. So with the PlayStation VR, you have that camera that's required, so it can tell if your head moves forward to the side, it shifts, you know, it strafes basically back and forth. And if those things are disconnected from your brain, that's when motion sickness sets in. And so that's why some of the lesser VR systems can't quite calibrate your head that way, and that's why this experience felt so natural, basically.
Chad, again, since you have really immersed yourself in the VR world, I told my audience that I'm more excited for AR. I love the idea of augmented reality, of glasses overlaying a layer of digital information on the real world. What makes you so excited about VR?
Well, VR, it has the ability to transport you to a space that you're not in. You know, augmented reality, you're still normally in the... It's augmenting actual reality. Now, it has its pluses, because Let's just say I'm looking at this mic. Look how realistic this mic looks. I can feel the texture. You know, you can't really do that in VR, but VR does have the ability to transplant you to the space station, to the moon, to just anywhere where augmented reality is normally a little bit more grounded in reality. But you do have that, you know, look at this reality demo. Wow, it feels squishy. Like, you know, right now VR doesn't have a way to actually work with real reality. So I'm excited for both, but that's why I'm excited for VR.
All right, last question here. Looking forward and looking at the competitors and looking that we do have three or four different companies that have solid products,
yes,
that have products that you could put on and say, okay, this is near the pinnacle of this technology. What do you want to see in the next year?
In the next year, I'm hoping to see the price come down and games. Two things. Just they need to be checked off the list. You have to have games, and you have to have the price come down, or the computers that can run the systems come down in price as well.
Fantastic. Chad, thank you so very much. We're going to be roaming this hall, so we might find more stuff for you know-it-alls. Until then, go home and play virtually with yourself. I'm here with Stein Stumpel from Manus VR, who's going to explain what you need to do to create a proper VR accessory. What is this?
This is a data glove. It's a glove that tracks your hand movement and sends the data to a wireless headset or any device that needs the data. Yeah.
Now, those of us who have been around for a while, we remember the original VR glove, the Nintendo Power Glove, which was comedically bad, horrible in every...
VR glove, though. That was a normal gaming glove.
Yeah. Now, we don't know exactly what that was trying to be. But, you know, the folks at home, when they look at an accomplishment like this, they're going to start to wonder, what tech do you have to put into it? What sensors do you need in order to have the right input? Because I've seen VR accessories, and all it takes is a little bit of drift, a little bit of error, and suddenly it breaks you out of the experience. What has Manus done to make this better?
Right, so a lot of hand tracking solutions use optical cameras at the moment that, like Leap Motion or machines like that. They are very good because they have a very low threshold for the user. It's just a camera and it can look at the hands, but it comes with a lot of limitations. For instance, there's a small viewing angle on these devices, and if I, say, throw an object, I place my hand out of my view and the computer doesn't know where it is. It also uses computer vision algorithms, which require more computation, whereas we have physical sensors integrated into the glove that give specific variables for each joint and each orientation point and quaternion coordinates and all those things. That is a very small package of data that we can send wirelessly at a very low latency. So latency is very important, and accuracy and consistency are very important in virtual reality simulations. And a physical glove is, in our opinion, the superior form factor for such a use case.
So basically what you've allowed us to do is you created a device that puts a 6-axis IMU on each segment of your hand?
No, we have a 9-axis IMU on the hand. The magnetometer also for correcting the yaw drift. And we have a custom flex sensor that we made specifically for this glove in the hand. That measures the knuckle joint and the first joint of the finger. This joint, we can completely infer from the joint below it. You can try to move it independently. I figured out after I started working on the project that it's actually impossible to move that one.
One of the things I like about your approach is from the beginning, you've said that this is not a VR game controller. You can use it for that, but Manus is positioning this as it is an input device. It is a very accurate input device, and we don't really know how many different types of applications will take advantage of this?
Yeah, so we are definitely focused on VR and VR for the consumer market. That's our main goal, and all of the design decisions and hardware decisions are informed by that market and the demands of that market. However, the SDK is open source. Anyone can make anything they like with it. We've flown a drone with it before. So you can have a drone lift off with the finger sensors and have it fly with the orientation sensor so you point to where the drone wants to go. There's a company in England who's making robotic hands, anthropomorphic robot hands, that can copy the motion of the human hand, which looks really cool, but it also has a lot of interesting applications in the medical fields and industrial fields. So, yeah, we want people to try as many things as possible.
Hopefully the audience at home and our DIY maker crew, our developers, are interested. Now, if they wanted to start playing with this, seeing how they could work this into their next big project, since you have the development kit, what kind of pricing will they be looking at, what kind of availability, and where can they go to find out more?
Right, so the pre-order reservations are open at www.manus-vr.com. It will cost €250, or $250, I'm sorry. For that, you will get a pair of gloves and a set of bracers that allow you to strap the Vive controller to your arm, which give you positional tracking with the HTC Vive.
That's fantastic. I was expecting to hear an astronomical price tag. That's actually affordable. That's something that I think we should probably mess around with on the show. Yeah. Thank you very much for speaking with us. Folks, this is the Manus VR, and wow, it's so bad. Some of our know-it-alls want to know exactly what Project Tango is. I'm here at the Google booth at GDC 2016, and Karsten Bondi, our wonderful producer, is trying out Tango right now. Now, we did a calibration very early on where we had to tell the tablet where the floor was and where the wall is, but as you can see, it's now overlaid a layer of reality on top of the real world. What I love about this is it's really solid. It's concrete. It knows exactly what the digital layer is. It knows exactly what the real layer is. And it allows you to, well, have the confidence of moving around and keeping that digital layer where it's supposed to be. This is no mean feat. This is something that only happens if you have the right sensors, you have the right timestamp so that everything stays synced up. And, of course, you have to have the developers who will make applications like this. Like right now, Karsten is shooting at the booths around Google, trying to bring down the pirate ship. We will see more and more of these applications, not just games, but productivity apps, the ability to walk into a server room and see exactly what servers are on the rack, the ability to walk into a boardroom and have the digital information of your participants overlaid on top of their real images. This is all to come with the future of Project Tango. In a world of VR, you need a tool that can help you to create the objects that go into that world, which is why we're here at Wacom. I'm speaking with Joe Sliger, who's going to explain what Wacom brings to those artists, to those visionaries, to the people who want to create the VR worlds that we're going to live in. Joe, what is this?
That would be the new Cintiq 27 QHD. I know I like really long words. So it's basically our flagship Cintiq. It's a pen display or a pen and touch display, depending on the version you get. And it's really designed for any true creative. So it gives you the precision of pen input, and in this case, and the manipulation capabilities that we've come to be accustomed with like iPads, for touch and whatnot.
Now, when I was growing up, way back when, I am an old person, Wacom was the name. If you wanted to do anything artistic, you had to have a Wacom pad. You had to have a touch-sensitive device that used a stylus so that you could get the fine strokes and the very distinct movements of the artist's brush. Recently, there's been this sort of move of, well, maybe a touchscreen is enough. Maybe a multi-touch pad is enough for me to do my art. What does Wacom add above that?
Oh, man. Well, obviously touch is a huge input, you know, service for all intents and purposes. But what it lacks is precision. I mean, we have literally 5,000 lines per inch of precision. So that pointer can be located literally almost depended more on how much coffee you've had, right? Then we also include pressure sensitivity. 2,048 levels of pressure, it's a lot. It's really not about those numbers, it's about that nuance, the organic just interaction with the computer. Add one more level with the ability to tilt the pen, and now you're back to modeling almost as if you were working with clay, able to carve and push in, pull out everything just like you were working with an organic tool, but in digital space. And everything has to be digital from the get-go now to make it that much faster and that much more rapid to actually get into your games.
Now, that's great to describe. I mean, that hits all the right points, but maybe you could talk a little bit about the process that's going on behind us right now, because this is an actual user of a Wacom tablet. I don't believe he works for Wacom, but he's using your brand new product to create this. It's an alien-esque model that just has so much detail, what you really expect out of something from a major motion picture. What tools and what process is he using to make this?
All right, so one of the first things you have to know is that we marry our software. I mean, without us, the software doesn't do nearly what it should. And without the software, we're just an input device. We might as well be a glorified mouse. But when that marriage happens, it gives you the ability to just open up. I mean, it literally opens your creativity and limits you only to what you're capable of pulling out of your head. And Justin Gobi Fields, in this case, our rock star out here, has been doing it with our Cintiqs for many years. I couldn't even count. And I mean, he's a role model for being able to literally create on the fly pretty much anything that's inspired either by him or an art director.
Now, if they wanted to find out more about the new Cintiq, they've wanted to find out more about that marriage between your hardware and the software, if they want to find out more about what you do with people who are into 3D printing, where can they go?
Oh, wow. Obviously, Wacom.com. Our Wacom YouTube channel, youtube.com/Wacom. We've got a whole bunch of videos out there learning about our product, learning about how to use our product. In fact, we've got videos with Justin on our website and on our YouTube channel, really showing off, in this case, ZBrush, and how to learn it, how to use it, and the workflow gain that's actually acquired by using our products.
Thank you very much for speaking with us. Thank you very much for sharing your tech. And folks, if you've got the next inspired idea for VR, don't draw them. Wacom.
Hi.
We're going to continue our coverage of the Game Developer Conference 2016 in San Francisco, California. But before we do that, let's go ahead and thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How, and it's PillPack. Now, PillPack is possibly the easiest way to get your prescriptions and your OTCs in easy-to-use packets. Now, here's how it works. You subscribe with PillPack. They get your over-the-counter and your prescription drugs, and they put it into individually wrapped, individually labeled packages so that you get your medication exactly when you should on the day that you should get it. Now, PillPack delivers your medications in these pre-sorted, easy-to-tear packets that have labels containing the date and the time for each dose. Now, you could get rid of that antiquated Monday-to-Sunday pill box and instead go with something that's in the digital world. Now, they use advanced technologies, creating personalized packets for each customer, and they're always checked by a pharmacist prior to being shipped, so you can count on having the absolute medication that you should have. PillPacks go through an image recognition system that's built to ensure that the right pill is in the right pack. Their system can detect dispensing accuracy by shape, size, color, and density of each pill, and catalogs an image of every single package dispensed, so you can always go back and make sure that you got the right medication. You can even order inhalers, creams, and diabetes supplies, and they'll come in refrigerated, easy-to-open packages. Now, switching is easy. You sign up on their secure site, and they'll take care of everything for you. PillPack's pharmacists are available 24/7, so you can speak with them from the privacy of your own home, or if you're on the go. They proactively contact your doctor to manage your refills for you so that you never run out. And here's my personal favorite part. They will check with your insurance to make sure that you're covered so you don't get that surprise bill after you've tried to switch your service. There is no extra cost beyond your standard copays, and shipping is always free. Folks, if you refer someone to PillPack and they sign up, PillPack will donate $100 to RX Art, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to help children heal through the extraordinary power of visual art. PillPack also has a medication app reminder for your Apple Watch, so if you want to really be in the digital age, you can have your gear remind you when it's time to next take your next PillPack. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to stop enduring your existing pharmacy. We want you to move your medications into the new age. Visit PillPack.com/twit. That's PillPack.com/twit to sign up now. Their site is beautiful, and it only takes 5 minutes to sign up. When you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. Again, that's PillPack.com/twit. PillPack.com/twit. And we thank PillPack for their support of this Know How special. Take the mind of a game designer, combine it with the passion of a maker, and what you get is Tank Crank. I'm here with the makers of one of the more original controllers here at the Game Developer Conference 2016. Gentlemen, behind us is, whose brainchild is it?
All of us?
All of us.
Yeah, all of us. Yeah, this was actually a final project for an elective course we had last semester. We all go to Parsons School of Design in New York, and Henry and I are master's students, and Jay Sung is a senior in the product design department, product design program. And yeah, this basically was a final project for a course based on experimental arcade controllers and experimental arcade games. And yeah, we basically started off with the prompt of wanting to explore the cranking mechanic, and this is what came out of it. Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about this design is, even though it's something that we haven't seen before, immediately, the first time you ever use it, you understand how it is. Because everyone's used some sort of crank device, and you get, okay, wheel spins faster on one side, it makes it turn this way. Opposite, it makes it turn the other way. Now, what kind of design input needs to be made in order to turn that simple idea, that skeuomorphic idea, into actual good game development? Anyone?
I don't know. I think you start off with the motion itself, and that's the thing that I think I was one of the things that you mentioned was a very different way of looking at how we approach that problem, because normally we see it as how do we develop the story and then how do we add in the things that make this action, but we start out with just purely that motion. So it really just led to what things rotate, what things require cranking, what have those things involved in them, and that's how we built in the rest of that game.
Our know-it-alls, they are pretty, well, they're tech-savvy, and they love Raspi projects, they love Arduino projects, they love embedded electronics projects. Could you give us, any of you, a sort of a sneak peek under the hood? What did you use to create these controllers? What did you use to power them?
So we're using Arduino Leonardo for the controllers. They're actually using 4 custom-made rotary encoders that are using quadrature encoding. So for those who don't know quadrature encoding, we're using 2 photoresistors and an LED source, and the sort of coverage with an encoder wheel that is either hiding or exposing that light gives us both the direction and the velocity. Then using that, we transfer that through the Arduino via serial to Unity, and then from Unity, then we are driving the wheels of the tank and basically causing it to turn, go forward, or go backwards.
I got to ask this for my own personal curiosity. Are those rotary encoders connected via I2C back to the Leonardo?
No, they're using a multiplexer for the 8 different inputs. So all of it's driven back into a single analog input.
Yeah. So, you're behind the hardware, right? I mean, that's your main?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And who was the primary game developer?
The two of us, yeah.
Unity.
How did you describe it?
Pair programming is the technique we use.
Yes. One screen, 2 keyboards, and a lot of late nights.
Now, behind you right now, we have both OMG Chad and my producer, Carson Bondi, and they're just loving this. I mean, we've gone through the entire show. We've played some of the most advanced VR that you have, and they can't stop playing this. I think it's that idea of it's something physical. It's something that's involving the whole body. I know that this is a mock-up and this was a student project, but where do you see something like this going? Where would you like to develop this?
I think just from today, we've gotten a lot of suggestions at like sort of adult bar arcades.
Thing like that, you know, just anywhere where you would have a large installation where you could get a large number of people. I mean, more than a couple times we've said, you know, crank tank plus beer would be a lot of fun. So if we see the interest, then obviously we'll pursue it. But yeah, as of right now, we're happy that people enjoy it here because it's certainly providing a lot of enjoyment for people.
All right, gentlemen, if they wanted to find out more about Crank Tank, if they wanted to find out more about you, your individual efforts and what you do, where's the best place to go?
Probably our website, just cranktank.co. That would find all the information about Crank Tank and then have all 3 of our contact informations and anything on that, all of our personal emails, so try to...
And our portfolios as well, yeah, since we're all students right now, so...
Game developers, you need to hire some students. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for an original idea, and thank you for something that's actually a lot of fun. Again, it's been a pleasure to play with your Crank Tank.
Hey guys, Chad here at GDC 2016. So I'm here in the Unity booth, and I'm talking to Marcos. And let me know, what is Unity talking about here at this convention?
Well, I have to say we have a bunch of different things that we've announced, most of them yesterday. It was super exciting. Everything's product. Our 5.3.4 is now stable format. People can use it right now to do exciting things. 5.4 is being released in a beta, beta to everyone. So even if you're a personal edition user, you can actually check new stuff, everything from global illumination to ray tracing to a lot of new features on the analytics side. So if you want to understand what people are doing in your games, we now allow you to heat mapping. We have device intelligence that we show you so that you can say, hey, I want to understand, in Latin America, should I be developing the Android platform or should I be developing for platforms at the same time, right? Questions that are really important to developers. We also had a really exciting announcement around certification and education. So we now, for the first time, offering certification. And actually, there are people who are taking tests here. The idea is, for companies, we want to allow them to be able to very quickly understand, what does a person know? So when they're hiring, they can look and be like, oh, they're Unity certified. I know that X level, and I can sort of be able to do these things for me. And on the flip side, for a developer, it's a great tool to show that you have some competency within Unity. So that was the exciting thing that we did. We showed our Atom demo, which is actually happens to be up right now, where we really pushed the envelope to do all of the different things that you can do. So you can see it, and it's like watching a movie, except it's all real-time rendered. So the games that are going to be created, the experiences that are going to be created, totally different. It's going to really feel like you're just sitting in a movie, except that you can interact with it. And then on the VR front, obviously, we've been doing a ton of stuff. We've worked closely with Palmer at Oculus. We've worked with Vive. We worked with the Gear VR folks. We announced our HoloLens support yesterday, so we'll be shipping that out. And then a bunch of other really high-end graphics-focused things for the VR. AMD and NVIDIA, they both have the Liquid VR and the GameWorks VR APIs, so we announced that we'll be supporting those. The idea there is really to give developers all of the tools that they need to start creating these really intense and amazing experiences, and then optimize for the kind of the GPUs that are out there so that you can actually experience them and put on a headset and be like, wow. Because I think it's all about having the wow moment, right?
And we may have gotten a little bit ahead of ourselves. Unity, just to, for people who don't know, I mean, I guess this is a good... it's been sort of the darling of the indie game scene. I mean, really, it's so great because you can... you know, I was talking to Karsten, our producer, before, and they're teaching Unity to his Hacker Scouts group. You know, this is a game engine that... it's almost like the friendly game engine in a sense that you could pick it up and learn a few basic things. You have libraries of even assets that people can add to your game, and then you can scale that up as high as you want to go.
I'd say, you know, you can download Unity right now. You can. Anyone can. And until you've made $100,000 in revenues, it's free. Right? So the idea is really to get it in the hands of everyone. And the neat part is we sort of play this Switzerland role. We're a platform, and we can help you push out to all sorts of platforms. We support 25 different platforms. So whether that's Xbox, whether that's PS4, whether that's Android, whether it's iOS, or whether it's on the VR side, whether you're going to Rift, we allow you to push out to all of these, Vive, Samsung Gear VR, you know, all of these different platforms. The idea being, we want you to focus on what you do best. Create cool stuff, right? Let's take the complexity out of it, and let's allow you to push it out to a bunch of different places so that you can say, hey, you know, I need to create this awesome experience, and I think it would actually translate really well into VR. How do I do that? So you can go into Unity, you've got the bear there, and you start to think about, okay, I want to take this game I made in VR, and how do I make it a 3D world experience where I can look around and see what's going on? And then we allow you the tools to be able to do things like that.
That's great. So I know that you just had a lot of announcements yesterday, but if you were to give me a sneak peek at maybe what's in the future, do you have anything to say on that?
I do. So we showed just a little bit, not very much, of our in-VR scene editing. So in other words, right now, you want to create VR, code, throw on the headset, look around, does it work, take it off, code, ad nauseum, right? So one of the things that we're looking at, and we have a special group within Unity called Unity Labs, who's focused on 5-year, 10-year out, what are the problems that are going to be created. And they're thinking about, what does it mean to create in VR? And so they've created this experience where you can actually, in VR, in your headset, using your controllers, start to create your gamescapes and your experiences. So you're sitting there, and you can literally pick up a mountain, move it somewhere, scale it up. You can add characters, all while you're sitting here in the headset. And it's not going to be that you might necessarily create all of it there. You're going to do some coding, let's be real. But it gives you that extra layer of being able to see and feel almost what you're creating in a way you couldn't do if you were just coding. So that's one of the things that we sort of did a little sneak peek of, we're doing more of. And I will say, I will leave you with, it'll be interesting to see that probably not just developers, but consumers may even be doing this kind of thing in the future.
I agree, because the thing that VR really gives you is perspective on the world. And it's even more important than it ever has been to actually see that perspective right as you're creating the level. Yep. It's really exciting. Thank you so much for having a great conversation with me.
All right,
and
cool.
Looking forward to what comes next.
Take care.
Cool.
We'll get back to the action at GDC 2016. But first, I'd like to take a moment to thank the sponsor of this episode of Know How, and it's the Ring Video Doorbell. Now, we all know what a doorbell sounds like, and we all know what it means. It means someone's at the door. It means a package has arrived. It means we should go and see who's there. And it could also mean that you've got an intruder waiting to break into your home. Folks, don't wait until it's too late. Don't wait until you've lost something that's near and dear and valuable to you. Get yourself a Ring Video Doorbell. Now, I know what I'm talking about because I actually bought one of these. Before Ring was a sponsor of the Twit TV network, I bought one for my parents, who are in a retirement community in Las Vegas. I was worried about them because there had been reports that, people were stalking houses. Essentially, they wait for people to go up to the club, for the elderly to go out to their noon appointments. They come in, they ring the bell, they look through the windows, and when they know it's safe, that's when they rob the place. Well, with the Ring Video Doorbell, if they ring the bell, they'll get a two-way communication with my parents, who are answering from their phone no matter where they are, so it always seems like there's someone home. Not only that, even if they don't ring it, the motion sensors in the Ring Video Doorbell will allow them to capture video and audio of anyone who might be peeking through the front door or looking through a side window. Essentially, the Ring Video Doorbell turns your house into caller ID for real life. Oh, I swear by this because it is technology that I have used for a year now. It is technology that I trust my parents with, and I know it's something that you're going to love too. Why not try the gadget that Time Magazine and USA Today called one of the best? Go today to ring.com/knowhow. That's ring.com/knowhow. Put your mind at ease and protect your home with the video doorbell that is one of the top 10 gadgets on my list. Again, that's ring.com/knowhow. For free expedited FedEx shipping. Again, ring.com/knowhow. With Ring, you're always home. Hey, know-it-alls. Do you remember when you were a little kid and you enjoyed curling up with a book underneath the covers? It just added to that interesting feel, the noir, just the rush of emotions that you get when you're isolated with nothing but your imagination. Well, that's what they're trying to capture here at The Little Book. I'm speaking with Adrian, who's going to explain why they created this technology that simulates that experience of long ago. What is The Little Book?
So The Little Book is basically you are a kid and you read under the blanket. And so what's happening is that when you are a kid, your mother didn't allow you to read. And so in this game, you read and you are hidden under your blanket. And so you have the blanket, which is physically linked to this game. You have also the book, which is physically linked to the game. And when you turn the page of the book in real life, you also turn them in the game virtually. So you have really this feeling of really reading something under a cover.
What I like about this concept is you're combining real elements with virtual elements. But let's go ahead and look at the tech. Tell me what came into making this book. Because obviously there's pages, there's a book, but you've also got some smarts built in to detect when pages are being turned and what the user is doing. Tell me about the tech setup.
Okay. Well, we have these pages, and these pages are controlled by potentiometers that you can see here, and We did some 3D printing with these things that enable us to really get all the position of the potentiometers. So basically, you have all the interaction that is linked virtually to the game. You already have all the feelings of the pages. It's not like just here and here. You have all these movements that is linked to the game. Also, you have here a sensor, a light sensor. And so when you put your blanket and you put it above you, you hide this light sensor, and it's also in the game. You have this blanket that you put above your head, and so when you lift it up here, it's also do that in the game.
Oh, what I like about this is the text from the book actually only shows up if you're wearing the Oculus headset. So that's the virtual part. And I believe we watched a player who was going through a story in the little book. And every once in a while, he would lift the covers so that he could like use a flashlight to look outside the covers, which I thought that was phenomenal. I thought that was fantastic. What went into designing that part of the game?
Well, it was really, we wanted that the player feel like a kid. And so this is what we thought. We thought the flashlight was, with the flashlight, you don't see everything what's going on in the room, and it is our main world for this game. It's like suggestion, like you don't see what's going on. You have some things that will scare you, but you don't see them clearly, and because we don't reveal what's strengthening the player, this is what creates really the scaring aspect.
Adrian, if they wanted to find out more about the little book, more about what you do, about this project, where can they go?
Where can it go? Well, it would be really, really awesome to bring it to maybe make several books and to be able to play the little book at home. For now, it's really an experiment, so we don't have everything fixed to be really ready for this. But yeah, it would be awesome to maybe make more smart objects in game, and this is why the GDC Alt Control GDC is really cool, because it's a lot experimenting with this kind of subjects.
Thank you very much for sharing your tech with us. Thank you for introducing us to the little book. And folks, if you want to relive your childhood, get yourself a little book. And know what else? I hope you've enjoyed our coverage of GDC 2016. Now, if you want more, don't forget that you can also find our GDC special at twit.tv/specials. We've seen a little bit of everything here, from the latest VR to Google's Project Tango AR to some of the independent games that make us chuckle. I think what GDC does is it combines the best of the corporate world, the corporate pushed out products, and what comes from the minds of the dreamers, of the new folks in the field. And I think that's what makes GDC so special. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasier, the Digital Jesuit, saying, now that you know GDC, go play.